ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. We are on issue 125, dead in the center of a story arc.
And dead in the center of 250 issues.
Yeah, it is. It's 100 and, I never thought that we'd see five, let alone 125. I'm Andrew
That's
Farmer,
120 more than we were expecting right. when we started.
Those are the dulcet tones of the Jedi Cole Houston, whom had the idea for this story arc, so I'm going to let him explain where we are and where we've gone and where we're going with this.
It's like that, what was it, one of those, not Jack Reacher, but Jack, what's his name with the...
Jack Palance?
Could have been.
Probably was not rate. Jack Palance.
Doing this joke here by just dwelling on it too much.
It'll be just drive it into the ground. This is the whole time. I really hope we get another
clear and present danger guy.
Oh, Jack Ryan. Jack Ryan.
Yeah, it's sort of like the it's not where we're taking you, it's where you've taken us type of thing.
There you go. And I just hope that this issue, I don't want to put too much pressure on either of us. But I hope this issue has another boomerang plane in it, because that took me all through the last week, the idea of the boomerang plane.
You never know. I mean, any given issue could be a boomerang plane type of issue. But where we're going with this one is, this is the middle chapter.
Right.
And oddly enough, the last truly grounded on Earth chapter.
Right.
Of the superhuman experience. And we're exploring a lot of the psychology, a lot of the circumstances as well that surround the superheroes and the supervillains that we know and love. And the in this particular case, what we're talking about, this is Above and Beyond. And we've talked about your normal guy who builds himself up to the ultimate...
The pinnacle extreme, of human achievement.
It's like... Bruce Lee and
Bruce
it's like Bruce Lee and Stephen Hawking melded into one, like Firestorm, you know, where you had like the best mind and the best body all thrown together, and that's how you get Batman.
Batman equation?
That's the Batman equation.
Okay.
And now we moved into the ones where you got your Tony Starks and your Iron Man types, your suit up of the armor, suit up in the, take what you've already got and enhance it with other things.
Yeah, modify yourself.
Yeah, to the point where the things you're modifying with are as important as the person.
Right. You lose the person to the modification at some point. Exactly. Ending with, and I think appropriately, Cyborg as a gap bridger between that and this.
And this is where you get into circumstantial superheroing or superhumans.
Right.
And that is either by accident of birth, which would be your mutants.
Right.
Or as I'm fond of saying on the show, mutants, to quote this island Earth. you get your mutants, and you also get your accidental type of heroes.
Your daredevils.
Your Dr. Manhattans, your Firestorms.
Of all, yeah, of course. Your Flashes.
This guy goes on a field trip, and all of a sudden he's stuck with his professor in his head forever.
Which is a really bad deal. When you get right down, if you want to examine... The real psychology of that situation, anytime you get the two people, two heroes in one situation,
yes,
it's a bad deal, because Ronnie Raymond is a young buck in college, you know, smart dude, but athletic. Like they made points that he was an athletic guy, and now he has this old really smart, like mega smart, like Reed Richards level smart dude living up in his brain pan.
Exactly. Well, not only is he living up in his brain pan, but let's just say he's, you know, getting it on, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, right?
With, like, Icicle, or what's her name? Is that right? Icicle, was that her name?
Yeah,
Killer Frost.
Okay.
So let's say, you know, she finally gets her way, and, you know, they're getting it on, and...
They're splitting atoms.
Yeah, you know, he's getting the chilly willy, and all of a sudden, you know, Doc's getting a little bit too. You know, he's just like this. You got this constant voyeur,
or the opposite, where, you know, and it even goes down to, like, should you have that third cup of coffee? Or,
yeah,
you know, like, do you really need that extra slice of pizza? Like, come on, man. Like,
did you remember to call your mother?
Exactly.
You were there.
It's like, I want to be a kid and do kid things. Did you pick up your prescriptions? Like, shut up, old man in my brain.
That's fine.
Not to mention the fact that, generally speaking, you're on fire all the time.
Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of a bad rap in and of itself. But yeah, so those are the type of characters we're talking about, and you know, we've had a lot of shows on you know, race and women in comics and you know, what it means to be a hero and what it means to be a villain, and none of those things. You know, all of those things are fairly well incorporated into the idea of the mutant, I would say. You know, the question becomes, and I had this thought while I was doing the research, is pre-mutant, you know, pre-X-Men, pre-real X-Men, where everybody was all of a sudden becoming a mutant, you didn't have a lot of the female characters or the characters of color. That was a function of the time as much as it was anything.
Absolutely, yeah.
But and after the mutants, which was, you know, we look at the time period at which the giant, you know, giant size X-Men number one and all that started coming out. You started to have your Storms, and you started to have your you know, your people of different origins coming in and becoming superheroes. But it wasn't because they chose to. It's like you said. It's because by proxy of birth, it was thrust upon them.
Exactly. They were literally born that way.
So do you think, and this is a more cerebral question, do you think that the creator creatorverse found it easier to bridge that gap from the old school to the new school, from the old way of thinking to the new way of thinking, if they could say, even in a weird subconscious level, that we can make these guys heroes because they weren't choosing it chose them. We can make a woman hero because
and one of
that.
The things that it allows you to do, because the origin is built in.
Right.
Boom. It was a mutant, you know. You start your life out as, say, a cut purse, and then Professor X catches you, and then you become a powerful X-Men character who goes on to be one of the strongest, best developed female characters, female leads, who's also a strongly developed ethnic character.
Right.
But what that does is, you know, with the exception of, say, characters like the Falcon, Black Lightning, you have a few, but conventional wisdom up to a point would be seemingly that gender and ethnicity were two things that won't carry enough of a story to be bothered with giving perfectly good origin stories,
right,
to characters that would normally be remanded into the background. So it was an uphill climb to get characters of substance like the Falcon out into the world, which was, you know, a character we didn't bring up in Man Plus, though later they kind of retrofit him to say he's got some mutant ability to talk to hawks or something.
He's got bird speak.
You simply can't have a trained animal, because God knows that hasn't been happening since the
falconry. Falconry hasn't been around.
Since before we made the big switch from BC to AD and everybody complained, you think daylight savings is a bitch. Imagine when everybody started having to write, you know, here it is, 5 centuries later, I'm still writing VC in my checkbook. But I don't know why these guys live so damn long. You got to give him.
But I mean, the X gene allowed, you know, let's face it, and as much as we love them, right, the old white guys in offices to play with, in a world that maybe they wanted to play in before, but couldn't because of the social restrictions.
Absolutely.
But they needed a vehicle to get there. They couldn't just start going, hey, black superhero, hey, woman superhero. Now we had X gene.
Yeah, because if you can excise the necessity of a developed origin story, not only does it get you off the hook The principal thing it gets you off the hook of is origin stories.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to dream up, say, okay, boss, what I got in mind here is like this guy is working in a lab, and then this lightning hits him, and the combination of electricity and chemicals, which would normally kill anyone.
Literally, everyone would die.
And that's a case of a really, frankly, ridiculous origin story that is sort of DC's version of Spider-Man. I remember the old first comic E-Man. I used to have some issues of that at one point. I remember getting curious and finally reading them.
Right.
I wound up getting them into a lot of comics at one point. And there was a great thing where like this, they were trying to track down the radiation trail of a character. And so E-Man transforms himself into some sort of Geiger counter bloodhound hybrid thing, and the guy's walking around with you is like, well, you wouldn't believe how much radiation there is just out in general. Like, there's even a radioactive spider. You think if it bit you, you'd get superpowers? He goes, no, you'd get radiation poisoning, and then you'd get dead.
And then you get dead.
That was such a brilliant line.
But the pitch is great, because you walk into Jim Shooter's office or whoever's the EIC at the time, and you say, hey, I got this great idea for this character. She's going to be African in origin, and she controls the weather. Okay, well, what's her backstory? She turned 16. That's it.
Exactly.
There you go. You're done.
She went through puberty.
But it really, the idea of the mutant pushed the boundary of allowing us to start to have, and frankly, I mean, we're not there even now. In the last 3 years, it's like a Darwinian evolution. You have these giant jumps in comic book evolution. You know, there's a status quo for a really long time, and then all of a sudden,
oh yeah, and a bit off topic, but certainly the new Miss Marvel is.
Oh yes,
you know. It was controversial enough that you get a brief glimpse at a Muslim
Night Runner,
Batman
yeah.
Incorporated
character. Just yeah,
inductee. Much less, you now have a full blown monthly title.
Widely
that,
considered,
that God
one of
forbid,
the...
represents the fact that
there are other religions.
There are other types of people, other religions, other. Cultures, other you name it,
but
we're in a way Batman Incorporated sort of paved the way for that. But certainly, it is that evolutionary thing, and while the mutant.
You see what I did with the evolutionary thing and the mutants there? You see? Yeah, it's
yeah, we're
that's
the future,
good podcasting.
Charles, not them.
Well, the future, Charles. Magneto cat. That was the best, worst Ian McClellan impression I've ever heard. Where the future, Charles?
It's like Ian McKellen.
We keep getting worse. It's great. Where the future, Charles?
It's like Ian McKellen and Catherine Hepburn's love
Where
the future, Charles?
Jimmy Stewart cast as... Oh, now I'm recasting the entire movie.
All right,
Where the future, Charles?
Where the future, Charles? Not them.
So what else did having mutants in comic books do? Like,
well, again, the nice thing is then you can do anything because you don't have to tie a power to anything. Like, somebody doesn't have to come up and throw something in Scott Summers' face to give him eye beams.
Right.
Right. You just, or you have to justify the fact that, he got this particular mix of chemicals turned him into I-Beam Boy instead of the Joker.
Right.
That was the beauty. See, but you used to have to rely on chemicals and magic. And then along came the atomic age. And then you could just, drip atomic material that was filtered through magic chemicals on people.
But I always compare it to Captain America, right? With Captain America, you get a Captain America story. Captain America volunteered to become Captain America. Captain America volunteered because it was a government-sanctioned military program. So we're going to get stories. We're going to get military stories for the most part, barring things like Streets of Ice, and then when he becomes Nomad. But we're going to get stories about duty and honor, and those, and that's great. I love Captain America. I'm the first person to say that
Sergeant Hulka would be proud.
that Captain America is one of my...
I want someone to write in and tell me exactly what I was referencing there to.
I don't even know, and that scares me. You know, and I love Captain America. He's in my top five Marvel comic book characters.
And he is also an Above and Beyond because he was just a regular guy who, unlike the Flash or Firestorm, wasn't accidentally...
Exactly.
...chemicalized. He was purposefully altered.
But he didn't
go out and like create the enhancements himself.
Right. The thing about mutants that I like is that you get to explore a lot of other stories with mutants than you do with a Captain America style character, because it wasn't an accident that made the mutants. It wasn't, you know, they didn't get bitten.
Yes, that's a very good point, because that is the other big thing that the mutant does, is it gives you a built-in guilt or other
drama.
Yeah,
you know, you get the you know, you don't get the empathy that you get with a Daredevil or a Spider-Man, where it was an accident. You know,
yeah,
this
and then
is
they
a,
chose to take their inadvertent gift
exactly the
and
mutant.
make the best that they could of it. Where the mutant then becomes like, I don't know, it's like almost like Bela Lugosi in a film, you know, haunted, hated!
You know? Right, right.
Yet, unlike Bela, they choose to do some good with that in spite of the hate.
And they're still, and I love that.
Haters gonna hate.
Haters gonna hate. Hate us because they ain't us.
They hate us because we're the future child.
The future child.
Well, no wonder they hate you.
That's the longest hashtag ever, by the way. Hate us because we're the future Charles, not them.
Haters gotta hate us because we're the future Charles, not them.
That's right. That's everybody out there.
Let's start developing.
Everybody out there, I want to see that hashtag.
You gotta hate us because we're the future Charles, not them.
You got it? All right, good. Yeah. We'll remind you later. This is your analogy to racism. This is your analogy to sexism. This is how you explore that territory, is with characters who are born differently and are ostracized for it, yet have this enormous power to wreak havoc on their dissenters and choose, for the most part, unless, you know, they
seriously
hate us because
they havoc.
I'm on fire tonight, and apparently Christopher Walken.
And
only because they hate us, because they ain't us, because we're the future Charles, not them. And we've talked at length about the racism portion of this.
Yeah.
You know, which I still think is relevant. I still think it's even
well,
in...
And also the thing about it is, what the mutant did was allow you to tackle race issues without actually tackling race issues. You know, DC and Green Arrow, Green Lantern was tackling race issues as race issues, where the mutant allowed a bunch of white kids
right.
to be treated and ostracized in racially supercharged ways. It's sort of like the old, the Frank Gorshin Star Trek, where you just paint a guy's face half black and half white, and you can sort of get that really... controversial,
but it's
concept out into the world and let people, you know, get that kind of story without actually telling that story in a time when you couldn't.
Well, it's like, you know, we always said was that this kind of storytelling, sci-fi storytelling, if done correctly, is the best kind of storytelling for informing on social issues. And it's almost trickery at some point. It's almost, you know, damn you and your kung fu trickery. It's almost, they're tricking you into a social consciousness with these stories. Because you're right. You got a bunch of essentially white kids from Rochester, New York. and through them, you're making people think about the way that they treat other people and the way they treat women and the way that they treat anybody that's different. So it's pretty amazing in that respect. You're absolutely right. And I haven't said it in a while, I'm going to say it anyway. I still think that linear storytelling is the absolute best way to tell any kind of story. Okay. It's probably been 100 issues since I've said that.
Yeah, it has been. But...
So outside of mutants, what do we got?
Well, you know, we talked a bit like your Captain America's and such, where you do have the occasional character who sort of stood in line and, you know, stood up to be counted amongst those who are willing to sacrifice themselves
right.
for the greater good and try to become this mutated type of
this more
future
than.
Who,
yeah.
Yeah. Then you have your characters, your Spider-Mans, Daredevils, Flashes, etc., who sort of become by accident. And, you know, we talked about chemicals and magic. Metamorpho is a great example of how magic is the catalyst.
Nice. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, here's Buwana Rex Mason going around being, yeah, Buwana Beast. Congo Bill and Congorilla.
Pretty much anybody who turns into a gorilla.
Yeah, but I don't know. Congo Bill may be more like Man Plus because he just has this thing ring he touches.
That's true. That's true.
And
I have a
goes,
thing ring so. I touch that turns me into a gorilla, too. Totally do not have that.
That's great at parties, though.
Just think about what you're laughing at.
But, you know, the thing about it is, you know, Rex Mason's going around having adventures, being like sort of like a, you know, modern-day Alan Quatermain and about the maybe 10 years later, so not that modern, but and
slightly
he finds
modern.
Some artifact that not only transforms him, but completely metamorphosizes him into, like, Jigsaw puzzle piece man.
Just like somebody melted a box of Crayola crayons on him.
Yeah, it's like
poor
if you,
guy.
You know, and then he just goes with it.
Right. He joins up with a bunch of different super teams.
Mm-hmm.
Continues his gentleman exploring efforts.
Yeah. And then eventually sires a an amoebic clone.
The Quasit? What was it? The what did they call it? I can't even remember what they called
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
You know, there's a team that we haven't talked about yet that I want to talk about, and I think this is the right time.
Absolutely.
And that team would be the Doom Patrol.
Ah.
Because
that's a good point, because the Doom Patrol also encompasses nearly every, in its history, would have encompassed nearly every one of the categories we'll be discussing.
Right. But, I mean, they're kind of jacked up, right? I mean, they're not, they're the kind of the B-team, the B-team's Fantastic Four. Where
oh, yeah. They're,
you got, like, a robot man and the negative man, and
They literally are like the other guys, you know. Yeah, they're superheroes, too. Mm-hmm, sure.
Right.
I've heard tell of them.
And speaking of, now that we're on that topic, of accident on purpose, right?
Yeah.
Fantastic Four.
Oh, exactly, yeah. Bombardment by cosmic rays or other rays.
Ray Charles. Sugar Ray.
Manta rays, if you will.
The band Sugar Ray. From what I understand, if you sit in a room.
Everybody loves Raymond if you watch enough episodes. The Raymondiation comes off the screen. That's how Where Romanos are born.
That's it is. Somebody contact the Where Romano. my favorite Man Plus, the Where Romano. But yeah, here's the thing, right? The cosmic radiation did not increase Reed Richards's intelligence, from what I understand.
Yeah, and it didn't make
him smarter. Are you to tell me that Reed Richards hadn't figured out somewhere along the lines that this was a possibility, that being bombarded with, you know,
I honestly think that Reed Richards is negligent.
I think so. I think he could have been
because if he didn't think about the fact that cosmic radiation was not only a possibility, is also apparently incredibly loud to drive through.
Exactly. It's the loudest
thing
in
space. It's like driving in hail, apparently, if we're to believe the first issue of Fantastic Four, because it's like, the hell is that? When does radiation make noise?
So if there's any takeaway from this, it's that if you hear radiation, get out of there, because you're probably going to end up like the thing. like Ben Grimm, and nobody wants that. Ben Grimm doesn't even want that.
I think it was one of those things where, you know, he may not have expected the result, but he had to have expected something was going to come of this. The most likely thing being that they all become these, you know, hideously bloated radiation reaction things like the guy in the day after. But
oh man, my favorite metaphor for the Fantastic Four is on the Venture Brothers, where all of them have exactly what you would expect.
Oh yes,
where the Invisible Man's skin is just invisible, and you can just see, you know, the insides.
See all the musculature and stuff right below the surface. It's just the epidermis that has become transparent.
And the Human Torch analogy, just constantly like third degree burns, just on fire all the time.
Yeah, he's just perpetually on fire, but it doesn't kill or asphyxiate or
anything. It just hurts. It just really, really hurts.
He's just in constant pain.
And that's the thing about a lot of these mutations, that, you know, we have to willingly suspend a lot of disbelief when it comes to mutations. Like Wolverine popping his claws. Like, you know, that he isn't going to be in constant just physical pain at all times.
That's one of the neat things that, and I'm sure that it's probably borrowing from things I never read, but, you know, you never address that point in the X-Men.
Right.
Like if Silver Samurai comes and thrusts an electro sword through your entire trunk, and then you are okay the next issue. the problem there is that nobody ever addressed the fact that just because you can heal doesn't mean it don't hurt like the mother.
Right, like you're going to be laid up for a while. Or, you know, I can't believe that you're...
Or at least, you know, be like that guy in Men in Black. Do you have any idea how much that stings?
Right, when he gets his head blown off?
Yeah.
Or Colossus growing metal skin. Mm-hmm. Can't feel good. Like, if you get a scab, it itches like hell. You can't tell me that growing metal skin over your human skin.
I don't know, though. What I would like to see is some transformative type of power like that that someone gets addicted to because it makes them feel good.
That'd be cool.
It'd be like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger doing his little talk about in the pumping iron and equating
right,
you know, bodybuilding to being like a certain autonomic function, that when the mommy and the daddy love each other very much, the daddy then through the course of sexual intercourse will then
That's being
the
clinical veiled
version of what he said. Yeah, you know what it is, like a pumping iron, and it's like when the mommy and the daddy love each other.
That was the first.
I tell
cut.
You what, why don't I just say it's like coming?
That's the first cut. That's the first. They cut all that out.
Yeah, why don't we just, can we just redo that where he cut to the chase horse?
Or Nightcrawler being disoriented when he bamfs, or, you know, there's a thousand of them that you have to, it has to be uncomfortable to do it, you know, but, and it's never explored. Like that, I'm not going to say it's never explored. Sometimes it's explored.
Well,
but,
I mean, you know, Nightcrawler's teleportation should at the very least be disorienting. It'd be like, okay, like say you go stand in the middle of a room. And you just start spinning around like a whirlwind.
Right.
I dare you to walk down the hall and get a beer and somehow not smack your head into the door.
Right, we're expecting him to come out the other side with, like, two cutlasses and a sash around his head, you know, fighting like a madman, let alone when he does it, like, seven times in a row to punch a guy. Or Quicksilver. Like, you can explain it away with the Flash because of the Speed Force and he's stabilized and blah, blah, frickety blah. Yeah. But, like, Quicksilver, he's just fast.
Yeah. Like, he's just like, you know, one day he wanted, you know, maybe he's like 11 or something, and the basketball goes rolling out into the street. He knows better.
Right.
But he's going to go after it anyway because that's, you know, damn kids do that. And then the next thing he knows, it's like, this very disorienting sensation of everything is completely still.
Right. Except for you, who are, you know, a mile and a half away now.
Yeah.
There are a lot of unexplored territories, I think, in this. Captain America's first, like, when he walks out of the chamber, you know, the barometric, whatever he was in.
The spider ray.
Right.
Spa cocoon there.
The Bacta tank that they had him in so that he could... It had to be, you know, for the first week he was bumping into stuff. You know, he's a different size, at least.
Yeah.
Let alone when he would go to, like, open a can of, you know, or a bottle of Coke, I'm sorry, time period, a bottle of Coke and crush the thing with his hands.
Exactly. Or, like, you know, let's say, you know, if you broke your arm or something, you had a cast, all of a sudden you're having to learn to add an extra, you know, inch and a quarter to your...
Right.
To one side of your body. It's like an arm cast, you know. You're probably going to bang it into everything because you're used to your spatial geometry has been thrown off by just enough.
Right. So you've got that. I mean, the only thing I can think of that was really kind of explored in that way because they had no choice, was Daredevil. Because he had to learn to use the radar appropriately.
And I guess, you know, arguably by the time you get to Wolverine or Nightcrawler or Colossus, etc., they may have... We just don't get the coverage of them learning to do that sort of thing.
But I would really like it.
Yeah, I think it would be fascinating because it's like, you know, apparently all Colossus learned how to do is destroy a perfectly good tractor when he stopped it.
Right!
That's where they got the idea for every episode of Smallville. Many were the times that if Clark would just turn a knob, it might have been unlocked.
You didn't need to go through the door.
Yeah, you didn't have to just yank the whole thing.
You have a key. It's like, how many doors, how many trips to Lowe's did Pa Kent make? Because he just went through.
Yeah, he just would go on to the doorknob aisle and just, you know, grab the back of the rack and pull the whole thing into the cart. As well, just stock up now at the rate the boy's growing.
But, you know, there's a lot I would really like to see examined in that respect. Like everybody's first day on the job, everybody's first day after, because, you know, like I said, the pitch is they turn 16. That's it. So how do you learn to deal with your powers? You don't have Batman Year One, you know, where you're out with a hoodie and a knit cap fighting crime.
To a very small degree, you did get that, and I do mean a very small degree, in the New Mutants graphic novel back in the day.
Okay.
When the New Mutants were first introduced, which would be, like Cannonball and Sunspot, whose power I never really could quite...
Never got it either. How
that was meant to work. If he wasn't invulnerable, but he was...
But as long as he was sunspotted up, he was invulnerable. But the
thing that was, he was supposed to be, like, super strong and everything, but he wasn't invulnerable. Well, you know, if you suddenly have the power of a freight train, smashing your normal uninvulnerable fist through a solid steel bank vault door will break every single bone in your hand, your arm, your shoulder. It will translate straight through, like down into your groin. It turns your bones into powder inside the fleshy sleeve of your body.
But
you were strong.
But that bank vault is...
There was sort of this attempt at building in some sort of aspect to that power.
Kinetic something.
It wasn't really thought through. And then, of course, you had Sam Guthrie there reminding you every issue. That's where they got the idea for the introduction to Arrow. Where he would remind you that luckily he's pretty much invulnerable when he's blasting.
Right, and also...
And that led to the Atrocious Universe character Mistletoe, who would remind you that he wished he was pretty much invulnerable when he's blasting.
I'm Sam Guthrie, I'm from the South, I'm pretty much invulnerable when I'm blasting. That was pretty much the panel, right?
Yeah,
there.
Every time he fired away, it was just like, oh, I think we caught on to that part.
We know now that you're A, invulnerable, and B, from the South. We get
it. It'll be like Batman Grand. I mentioned my parents died in front of me when I was a kid.
The most depressing comic book.
Yeah.
If you just held down whoever, you know why I do this? Like, no, come on. You know how many Gotham villains would give up crime?
Yeah.
Just for that.
I hadn't really thought this through. I think I'll go back and work for the Home Depot again.
Right. I think Pa Kent's going to come by. He needs some doorknobs.
I was in charge of restocking the doorknobs.
There's an aspect of this as we you know, come into the home stretch that I kind of wanted to talk about, and that was, in my research, I had completely forgot until I stumbled upon it, about characters that make other characters into this more than man. Characters like the High Evolutionary and Apocalypse,
yeah,
and Mr. Sinister. What is the motivation there?
I think some of these characters are taking the whole, you know, we're not the future Charles, they're not the future Charles, to an even higher level, where, you know, they didn't have the benefit of a dying uncle telling them that there was really any responsibility involved. They just, you know, they're all in, and they know what they can do. I think that's one of the things. Another thing that the mutant does for you is that, because it, really the mutants become almost like a villain factory,
right?
In a way, because that you get any noble superheroes out of the bunch is pretty remarkable, and of course that's kind of the whole idea about the Xavier Magneto rivalry,
right?
Is that then you get this sort of almost theological God and Satan playing for the souls, you know,
right?
Who can garner the most souls up under their side? Because, you know, the idea of a mutant power, as much as it was just hackneyed, the whole thing with Pyro and the X-Men movies.
Yeah.
You know, it was very hackneyed, but it had an underlying tone that could have been better explored, and that was, you know, once you realize that you can do anything, why bother to care about anything?
Right.
And you really see that illustrated beautifully in Kingdom Come.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Because you have a generation or two that don't have or feel the need to have any of the nobility,
right,
or any responsibility. And so they're just running roughshod over all of humanity. And what was really amazing about that story is it blurs the lines between hero and villain.
Right. I mean,
they just are. You know, there are no... it's like that song, you know, there ain't no good guy, there ain't no bad guy.
It's just you and me.
There's only just disagree.
Yeah.
This one is all over the map.
It really is.
For those of you who haven't figured out, I'm particularly punchy right now.
We've been doing AllCon trivia like madmen for a goodly number of days and hours, so forgive us if we stray.
Yeah, we're taking
forgive
a little bit
our
of
trespasses.
Break from all that right now.
But you're right, because even, you know, as we read comics and as we have read comics for the past 30-odd years, whether we like it or not, there's been this understood, written-in gentleman's agreement. And actually, if you want to get technical about this stuff, the superheroes are the ones that are really at fault in this, because they're the ones that are building their secret clubhouses dead in the center of New York or Metropolis or wherever, where they can, you know... You can't have Avengers Mansion and the Baxter Building in the same city. That's just a mistake. You know,
yeah, that's bad zoning, for one thing.
Right. Where's the city commissioner on this? Where's the zoning board? But the other side of that is the villains always have it in a swamp or in the middle of a desert. You know, that's where their stuff is, on an island.
Also, there's an economy of scale there, because the villains are actually in it for the money. And here's the way this equation works.
Okay.
The hero being the noble soul is, you know, they're there for the good of all mankind. So they're throwing all their money into the best digs, the best equipment, everything, because they're in it for the long haul. The villain knows that the key principle, the key tenet of making money, is never spending any of it. So they go and get the worst swampland that old man Hazelhaddon had. Remember old man Hazelhaddon?
I do. Old man Hazelhaddon.
Yeah, who was not... fouled by meddling kids.
What's the name of our comic book again?
Oh, the Muggerville Seven. Yeah, the old man Hazlitt
has to be like go somehow. We'll go from issue one where he just owns a plot of land somewhere that is bought by the supervillains to being this multi-billionaire real estate mogul somehow. Yeah. And he still will go by Old Man Hazelhaden.
Old Man Hazelhaden, yeah. And somebody will come in like, well, Mr. Hazelhaden, call him Old Man Hazelhaden. You know, like this Victor Zsasz from Gotham looking guy standing over his shoulder. You call him Old Man Hazelhaden.
With his weird braces and a couple switchblades.
So, you know, they're going to go and get the cheapest land, the places nobody wants to be. These are the things, because they want more of the money for themselves. They're not going to spend it on infrastructure.
Right, right.
Plus, a lot of times you can find some, you know, old abandoned Walmart or something that nobody really notices that the electricity's been hooked back up.
Right. No, you're right. And the other, I think there's
you got somebody on the electric board on the take anyways.
Right. I know we've gone a little far afield from the topic, but I don't care. There's a sense of misplaced nobility as a superhero, too, that you're going to build Avengers Mansion right in the middle of, like, Central Park in New York or Baxter Building in downtown or the Sanctum Sanctorum in Soho. I forget where they built that, hipster or whatever.
Yeah.
It's that you want to be where the action is going to take place. You want to be where it's a catch-22, really, at this point.
Well, you know, one of the things a lot of people like is, I mean, if we all had it our way, we'd like to live close to where we work.
It's true. The commute's less.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that you're where the action is when you're creating where the action is, because the Zodiac or the Sinister Six or, you know, the Fearsome Four or whoever's going to show up at your door in the middle of New York, regardless. So now all of a sudden you're making the action where it is. We discussed that in the Heroics episode. You created a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And in some cases, if you can't find the villain, you engineer the villain.
Cole, what you thinking about?
Huh?
I said, Cole, what you thinking about?
I can't imagine. It probably had nothing to do with anything to do with Watchmen.
Since we're on the topic of Watchmen.
It was actually a couple of issues of Astro City I'm thinking about.
Since we're on the topic of Watchmen, can we talk about the Watchmen? How does this issue tie into the Watchmen?
It ties into Watchmen mainly through Dr. Manhattan, who is your accidental.
Okay.
He is your Flash Plus, because, you know, as it's described in, I think, some of the background material in the book, it is an irreproducible effect. You know, try as you may, a good analog to this would be Sasquatch from Alpha Flight, who, again, this is another one of those teams that we get to utilize throughout the entire thing, because it's kind of like Sasquatch from Alpha Flight, because he was trying to reproduce the effect that created the Hulk under controlled conditions. And the nice thing about gamma rays is they're not noisy at all. They're very quiet.
Very
you
nice.
Can have neighbors. But, you know, much like in the Hulk, in fact, Byrne himself has said that he deliberately kind of was playing, doing a nod to the Incredible Hulk television show by having Lankowski actually, you know, trying to, you know, having the thing where he literally had like the whole big seat, the bombardment seat.
You're right.
The lazy boy of science there going on. he engineered trying to become this Hulk creature and got the better deal. Apparently, if you do that under controlled conditions, you get much better results than if you're just out in the field and it happens accidentally.
Right, if you're trying to save lives, yeah.
And in his case, he also got to have an illustrious ginger coat.
that he gets to brush out every night.
Yeah, that's right. Which, you know, came from, as Byrne explains, it was high sunspot activity that resulted in orange instead of green. Sure. Also, a tremendous lack of understanding of the color wheel.
Chromatic distortion.
I'm not really sure how you go from green to orange, because it's a bit of a stretch. But at any rate, you know, Dr. Osterman goes to retrieve a watch, gets stuck in the, you know, becomes the victim of the law of unintended consequences, because the worst thing you can do with any kind of dangerous equipment is make it impossible to shut down. I mean, that's the height of hubris for science, I think.
It's right. Like, it happens, you know, all the time.
It's just, yeah, here's our dangerous experiment that really is both unethical and largely unscientific. We're just here frittering away the last of the old grant money from the war. Just goofing off in the name of science. This is how nerds waste money and time. And, you know, the result is a tremendous payoff, number one. So it turns out they were really able to justify that horrendous budget.
They call it the William Tell effect.
Exactly. If this works, it's going to be celebrated.
If not, we end up with an arrow.
If it doesn't, I'll hang for it. But, so it was one of those things where you have a character who never, you know, his sole ambition was to, you know, out Einstein, hang out with his science pals, and get laid by Janie Slater again.
Again.
Yeah. And then next thing he knows, or knew all along, see what I did there?
See?
Simultaneously.
Damn science frat.
Walked into his doom that he was inevitably going to have done. There's nothing he could do to stop it.
Right.
So, you know, it is one of those things where he becomes the corollary, because you already have your first two chapter characters run riot on this thing.
Right.
And the only other one that universe allows is the single, inexplicable, impossible to reproduce, above and beyond the superhuman.
Right.
That just sort of occurred because of a billion different circumstances that could never, would be like finding another snowflake.
Yes.
Apparently a big blue naked snowflake.
A big blue wiener naked snowflake.
Yeah. That apparently also, as a result of reordering matter to construct a body, apparently he never got the idea of hair. That's a tough one. You know, I think that the people who do
time.
That's a good point. Maybe it was just economy. But I think it really had more to do with something that in the virtual world, early CG, animated features like Shrek.
Right.
From what I've seen, apparently hair is a bitch.
Yeah. It's
so
like
I think it's what happens when you're trying to reconstruct yourself out of the constituent atoms, is that hair becomes far, you know, you probably, you know, looked in the mirror and thought, okay, this looks like a some sort of weird Jackson Pollock. I don't know what's going on here. Let's lose the hair. Otherwise, I think I've shaped everything up pretty well. All of the bits are bit-shaped.
Here's the thing, right? I have another theory. My theory is this. There's a finite amount of matter in the world, right? You can't can't create more matter. Your matter just is reconstituted into other things. I think he had a finite amount of matter to work with, and he looked in the mirror and he said, okay, here are my options. Hair, or to make my blue wang bigger.
That's right. Well, I mean, if you're looking at the Zack Snyder version.
You will always go blue wang bigger.
Yeah. Well, if you're going at the Zack Snyder version where, the actual on-paper comic version, he's got a much more economical number. And it's more your classic Greek statue and not your
porn star.
Yeah, not your Harry Reams, which apparently we needed for the big screen. I don't know why that's passable on screen.
It's CG. That's why.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah, you can put CG wieners on in movies all day long. I'm surprised they aren't just CGing wieners onto everything. I would. That's why they don't let me work in Hollywood, Cole. There's one. Okay, so we're up against it. There's one. I want your take on one more type of type of this character. Okay?
Let's see. All right.
And that is this. There's one type of man, not man plus, but you know, above and beyond type character that we have not talked about.
And that, you've actually also brought one, and unless you happen to hit this one, I've got another one coming.
So. Okay. And that is the monstrous category.
Damn you! We're on the same page. Yeah,
the hive
mind strikes
again.
I was grokking what you were saying.
You were picking up what I was putting down.
Yeah.
And that is the and I want to know your take on the monster, on the man wolf and the wolf man and the Frankenstein on both sides, and your
and your vampires like Blade,
right? Because Blade falls strongly into this category where he became a vampire by accident.
Yeah.
A daywalker. My bad. A daywalker. Wesley Snipes, please stop writing me. Writing me, Wesley Snipes, from prison. So how do you feel about this?
Oddly enough, I'm gonna challenge this a little bit, because what that is, in most cases, that is either magic or science.
Okay.
That is the catalyst, that is the vector. And in a very strange and similar way, these monster characters and their subsequent monster serials, like Frankenberry, are very much there's a modern version of that in the form of Cloak and Dagger.
Who were like
street kids kidnapped by the mob, or street kidnapped by the mob, who are then injected with some sort of drug that they want to make. Apparently, this is where the real world got the idea for crack, because in the comics, the mob was trying to come up with a cheap, highly addictive drug.
Yeah.
Cheap to produce, horrendously addictive. And the result of apparently having clinical trials on kidnapped urchins was Cloak and Dagger, who then turned themselves against their former captors, and then crack was invented, and turned out, well, yeah, no superhero side effects here in the real world.
the real world analogy just sucks.
In a very similar way, these mobsters become like the vampire,
right?
Who deliberately turns others into vampires, or the werewolf for those of you who prefer werewolf, oftentimes in its blood rage, inadvertently creates more.
Right.
And ultimately, these things are much also like the things where you get some sort of weird Andromeda strain virus or something that gives somebody superpowers.
Right.
It would be like, you know, if you had a pathogen like Ebola, which kills like 95% of its host, yet how do 5% survive? That, you know, I can't put my finger on it, but it seems like somebody had some kind of weird ass disease or something that gave them superpowers. And that to me would be an interesting thing to explore. It's literally like you have a pathogen that has killed nearly everyone who ever got it, but it's never been a connection's never been made between it and the advent of the super being.
Right.
But in a way, that's what that is, that, you know, the curse of Dracula or the curse of a werewolf is akin to a pathogen.
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
That gives something back to its host, in a way.
Exactly. No, you're right. That's an awesome analogy. And with that, I think it's time to wrap up the show. I know
one of these days we're going to go back and re-explore even more of these. I think we've re-explored all of three topics ever in the history of this show. But, you know, about the time we're thinking, well, let's re-explore something, we'll have some other great epiphany about things we haven't talked about.
Our old man brain will spit something out.
Yeah, and something will trump everything else. So, and that's why you're on this arc right now.
So why don't you plug us up, and we'll get out of here, and we'll come back next week and talk a little bit about aliens and outer spaceians and
that's
other
right.
Worldians.
We are going to go out of this world with the kind of exploring what is it like, what does it mean from every standpoint.
Right.
To be a last son of Krypton or a last son of Mars. There's a lot of aliens or the last one. What the hell?
Or dimensional travelers. Or,
yeah, where you're coming from somewhere else. Exactly. And all of a sudden, you either make Earth your home, or you make Earth your target, or whatever.
And you end up making Earth your bitch, regardless of what you do.
Some of them do. Terminus, Galactus.
Anybody with us at the end. Annihilus.
Yeah, you should just avoid Thanos. All the us's.
They hate us because they Thanos.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, Thanos.
Thanos.
Thanos. Yeah, there it is. I knew it was in there somewhere.
That's our new one for today.
So we have a hashtag, hate us, because...
haters gotta hate us, because...
We're the future Charles.
Future Charles, not them.
Not them. And Thanos.
Thanos. So, first off, I want to say if you've enjoyed this show, or if you enjoyed any of the shows here on the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com, there's a plugging up for you. You will find us and a bunch of other incredible people, probably a wealth of whom we have no idea who they are. We are sure if they're putting on something at this event, they're pretty cool too.
Right.
We just haven't experienced their work. But I'm talking about AllCon, ALL-CON. It's going to be at ALL-CON.net. Go check it out. Scroll down to the bottom of the page. Hit the enter the site button and discover a wealth of amazing things going on, amazing guests, amazing panels, workshops, game shows, might I mention?
You might.
So we are going to be there in force. We are going to be out there doing, I'm personally involved in 20 some odd things. I think Andy's, this is going to be your trial by fire year where you're going to rival my own.
I've got a lot going on, yeah.
You have a schedule that looks like mine 3 years ago, 4 years ago, before I kept adding more things.
Right, and you know how we work. The things, it looks good on paper, and then every spare second of time is us passing each other in the halls running.
I mean, there are literally people who are there as part of the entourage solely to remind me to perhaps eat food or...
Right. It's like a marathon. People are just standing in the aisle with a cup of Gatorade and...
And I want to point out that I just happened to have my Facebook page up and this post suddenly appeared.
Yeah, so, what's that post say?
Yeah, cool. It's hashtag hate us because we're the future, Charles, not them.
Hate
us. So the do check out AllCon. Check out JediCole.com for info on AllCon coming up. We're going to do a show pre AllCon. We probably won't shut up for a while post AllCon.
No, we won't. Expect lots of new guests, lots of new weird content to come out of us after AllCon. It always does. We always meet new people. We always put people into the fold that weren't there before. That's what AllCon's good for.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Go get out there, get involved, go by the volunteer table, sign up for some volunteer time, earn a free pass to next year, meet some incredible people, and get involved in this incredible show. I've been part of it all 11 years in one capacity or another, in damn near every capacity.
Right.
And you can find out about that show and others at Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info. A little sidebar project to help inform people about conventions of every stripe in the Lone Star State. And,
Serena Vincent's going to be there, and I just found that out last night, and I almost lost my
shirt. I saw that. You were...
Because the thing is, everybody's all excited about Serena Vincent being there because she was a Power Ranger, and she's been in some fairly reputable movies at this point. I'm looking them up now. Not at all. I am extremely excited that Serena Vincent's going to be there because she was in Sasquatch Mountain, which to me which to me is the pinnacle of acting. There is no better acting in my mind than being in Sasquatch Mountain. Yeah, she was in Return to House on Haunted Hill. She was in Cabin Fever. She was in Not Another Teen Movie. But trumping all for me was, I really hope that she has a glossy of Sasquatch Mountain that I can get off of her while I'm there, because I will get it off of her while I'm there. I just promise you I won't get it on her while I'm there if I get it all.
Thank goodness.
What else can they find us, Cole?
That they can find us at, of course, the Unicycle Universe. You can find us on deepelemonair.com, where Andrew and I once a month will be bring this show live to you as Hey Kids Comics Live, and also if you've enjoyed the Rantcore Pit on the Jedi Cole Universe, Eddie Medina and I, in fact, a couple of days after this goes live, we'll be having the latest episode of the Rantcore Pit live over at Deep Elm on Air from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. That's every other Sunday, and then the second Saturday of every month for the most part. You have Hey Kids Comics Live coming at you from 11:30 to 12:30.
We do, and we just had an awesome episode, which you can find on their website.
That's on their website, or at Daily Motion, or on the Jedi Cole Universe. Just look for the sixth episode, the sixth issue of Hey Kids Comics Live. We're 125 in here, 6 months in on our still relatively new show. It's still pretty fresh. Occasionally, we'll take it out of the Mylar and
that's right, shake it off.
Shake it off. So be a part of that, and we will be back here next week with some out-of-this-world exploration of out-of-this-world characters. And lots more fun, so I'm veg now.
Yeah, we're veg. So join us next week. We're going to have another great, awesome episode for you. Come to all cons, see all of the live stuff we're doing, and don't forget to buy, collect, and enjoy your comic books. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, and don't forget, haters got to hate us because we're the future, Charles, not them.
That's right. I just corrected it. I just corrected it on Facebook.
I noticed that it was a slightly abbreviated version.
Yeah, now it's hate us because they ain't us.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Hate us because they ain't us because we're...
It's actually haters got to hate us because they ain't us because we're the future Charles.
God, I'll get it right. We'll have to get it right. We'll have to lock that down. Get it on a t-shirt. We're gonna put it right across the side of the boomerang plane. It's going to be awesome.
We're going to make a big banner for all con hanging from the mezzanine.
All right.
Haters got to hate us.
I don't even know.
Because they ain't us because we're the future Charles.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.